Welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned that eating more fruits and veggies may be better for your mental health than your physical health. Now, eating an apple a day will still keep the doctor away, but it's just a matter of when those health benefits kick in. Science tells us that fruits and vegetables can reduce the risk of cancer and heart attacks, but those health benefits are often seen decades down the road, and that kind of long-term boost can make it really hard to keep up the motivation. But in a new study, researchers explored the psychological benefits of eating more fruits and veggies, and they found that an increase in your daily dosage of healthy food made a marked improvement in well-being in a much shorter amount of time. Now, the recommended daily dose of fruits and vegetables is between 5 and 9, so the study followed more than 12,000 people and tracked happiness benefits for each extra portion of fruit and vegetables up to 8 portions per day. For those who went from almost no fruit and veggies to the full 8 servings had an increase in life satisfaction equivalent to such big life events as going from being unemployed to getting a job, which is pretty remarkable. Also, these well-being improvements occurred within 2 years, which, when you compare it to decades, is nearly immediate. So, eating more fruits and veggies may do wonders for your health in the long run, but in the meantime, it'll make you happier, too. This week I learned that dinosaurs probably didn't roar, but instead cooed. Researchers recently performed an in-depth side-by-side study comparison of the vocal organs of birds and the vocal organs found in fossilized dinosaurs. What they concluded was we've been wrong all along about these beasts. Rather than the open-mouth roar of, say, a lion, dinosaurs actually used a closed-mouth vocalization that sounds more like a dove's coo or a mumble. Now, closed-mouth vocalizations are emitted through the skin in the neck area, while the beak is kept closed. As far as a modern equivalent, it's probably not really a dove's coo. It's actually the ostrich's sounds that are probably closest.
Oh. What is it doing?
It must be stabbing. I've never seen it do that.
Scientists also point out that birds descended from dinosaurs, so their sounds are likely to align. Their research shows that since the dinosaur era, this kind of closed-mouth vocalization has evolved at least 16 times. And this study pairs nicely with a previous one that revealed that almost all dinosaurs were covered in feathers, which also argues for a very deep genetic root linking dinosaurs to birds. This week I learned that in the early 1920s, a flood of female mayors were elected into office. The 1920s were actually a really fascinating time in our history. Women had just gotten the right to vote and prohibition was sweeping the nation. Temperance actually provided a political platform that was ripe for the so-called feminine ideals and morals. Cities were in need of cleaning up, and frankly, women knew how to do that. So many women ran a campaign of municipal housekeeping. Yep, women, of course, could only really step out of their household domain if it was seen that their tasks were parallel. So women candidates had to walk a very fine line here. To seek political office is a power move, but women couldn't lavish in ambition. So their candidacies were reframed as the farthest thing from radical. Acting as a mayor was a natural extension of a woman's role, cleaning, budgeting, organizing, keeping people safe. But some women skewed campaigning altogether, taking the passive approach. Ella Jacobson became mayor of Waterloo, Nebraska, defeating her own husband when voters wrote her name on the ballot. Sten Skorup even campaigned for her brother and yet still won the election in her town of Salinas, Utah. Numbers are a little sketchy because there were many remote towns in the West that may have been run by women. But following the passage of the 19th Amendment, newspapers identify at least 21 white female leaders serving from 1921 to 1923. Most of these female mayors were in the West, which was much more progressive than the patriarchal East Coast. And these women were among the first elected in significant numbers with the help of women voters. In at least two cities, women actually took over the entire town councils, including town clerk, health officer, and even town marshal. And while their time in office appears to have been short, many women mayors had great success. In Red Cloud, Nebraska, the mayor, Mary Arnold, managed to pay off the $90,000 debt left by the previous mayor in just 5 years. Several mayors instituted prison reform, separating male and female inmates and establishing juvenile facilities for those younger offenders. More than anything else, though, these female leaders inspired a more widespread interest in civic duty, since now the other half of the population could see themselves represented in the town and the town's prosperity. While this team of female leaders is a bright spot of progressive history, it still took another 50 years before the first female African-American mayor would be elected. That would have been Lela Foley Davis, elected mayor of Taft, Oklahoma, in 1973. A year later, Doris A. Davis became the first African-American woman of a major metropolitan city when she was elected in Compton, California. And finally, this week I learned some bad news for Splenda addicts out there. The artificial sweetener may be tricking you into eating more. A new study looked at the effect sucralose, the artificial sweetener marketed as Splenda, had on fruit flies. They had one group of fruit flies eating a normal diet and the other eating a sucralose diet. The ones hopped up on the artificial sweetener were found to eat 30% more calories than the other flies. But that's not all. Researchers then gave both fly groups the regular diet and studied the brain activity in the group that had eaten the sucralose. And what they found in the brains of these sucralose flies was that the neural pathways that make food taste better when you're starving were all lighting up, which basically means that sucralose tricks your brain into thinking you need to eat even when you don't. Researchers found the same results when the study was done on mice, and while we don't yet know if the same would be true for humans, it does follow in line with previous research. One large study followed thousands of residents of San Antonio, Texas, for 10 years, and what they found was those who drank more than 21 servings of diet drinks per week were at twice the risk of becoming overweight or obese, and that risk increased with the more diet soda consumed. So what may be going on in our brains is a calculation disruption. Our brains compare calories and sweetness to figure out how much we should be eating, and artificial sweeteners may confound that math and cause us to eat more as a result. And that does it for this week's episode of This Week I Learned. You can catch new episodes every Friday on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to read more about the facts I've mentioned or check out the week's selection of podcasts, including 7-Minute Opinions and 7-Minute Explainers, go to theweek.com/audio. And if you like what you hear, subscribe, tell your friends, and give us a rating or a review on iTunes. I'm Lauren Hansen, and thank you so much for listening.